doesn't think much of Alec.
Yeah, I've heard a little bit here and there, and what I have heard is not good. They have the interest of corporations at heart, not the interest of the residents of and citizens of the United States and the residents of Oregon. But, you know, what the one thing that I have heard about Alec, though, is that they don't have the small business person's best interests. That they were formed by these large corporations, and that their interests are what they care about.
Dahlman said that Oregonians for Food and Shelter are considering challenging the Jackson County GMO ban, though they haven't made a decision. He also said that he expects the court to strike down Josephine County's ban.
I think the courts are going to be working it out one way or another. We think that it is clearly preempted by that law.
Chris Hardy, the farmer who found the GMO beets in the first place, says that Jackson County's response at the polls should suffice.
It's, you know, the two-thirds of Jackson County citizens voting in favor of our ballot, of the measure 15119, should send a clear message to any politicians, legal battle that they're barking up the wrong tree. Our citizens in Jackson County and in Josephine County believe that protecting the future, believe in protecting family farms in southern Oregon is more important than protecting the interests of chemical corporations.
This KABU Special Investigative Report was produced collaboratively by Mike Klepfer, Don Merrill, Sam Smith, Yana Maximova, and Sam Bowman.
Hey everybody, elections are coming up for the KABU Board of Directors. Right now we're looking for board candidates with skills in finance, new media, and nonprofit development. So if this sounds like you or someone you know, you can download a copy of the board candidate package at kboo.fm or pick up a copy at the station during business hours. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The application deadline is midnight June 30th, so don't delay. And thank you for supporting community radio, KABU.
This program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or radiocab.net.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
What's up, everybody? This is Goddess and She, and you're tuning in to KBOO Portland. Holla at your girl.
Hey there, listeners. Welcome to Out Loud, Queer News and Culture here on KABU. I'm your host tonight, Alan. We've got a great show for you tonight. Anthony Hudson is here. And later we're going to hear from a gentleman involved with Pervert the Cirque, a circus that has some performances this weekend. Welcome to Out Loud. Hey there, listeners. Thanks for being here. I want to give you a little brief on something that's happening this weekend. Last week, we talked with Jason Ingram. He is the creator of a piece called 12 Years of Fundy. He was in reparative therapy for a long time, 12 years, trying to, I guess, eliminate his homosexuality is one way to put it. So there's a conference this weekend, a reparative ex-gay conference. A local organization in Clackamas is putting together this national conference. So he is putting on a piece in response to that. It's a piece he's performed before in a few other cities called 12 Years of Fundy. He's a local gentleman. And the piece is performed at Kairos UCC in Milwaukee on Saturday. There's at 4:30, there's a reception, potluck if you want to schmooze and bring your own food. Or you can come to the presentation. That's at 6 p.m. For more information, you can get in touch with Jason, gaypray@gmail.com. That's 12 Years of Fundy. Also, we have Peacock in the Park coming back Sunday at noon, I think. Anthony, is that right? Noon? We know?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a whole day affair. Yeah,
that's fabulous. That's fabulous. So it's been 10 years gone, and now we're back. It's super exciting. And looking a little ways down the road, I just got an announcement that Portland Latino Gay Pride is putting on a documentary called Trans Visible. That'll be at the Hollywood Theater way down in July 26th. That's a Saturday. So mark your calendars. And we'll announce that on our Facebook. It's KBOO Out Loud. Please join us. And you can keep track of what we're talking about here on the air and other community events that we get information about. We try to keep it fresh and current so that folks can see what's happening in this crazy city where a ton of things are going on. And somebody who's involved in many of them, Anthony Hudson, is here with us. And also, Anthony, among many other things, is the creator of the drag clown known as Carla Rossi. Anthony, welcome.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here. I got my hair cut just for the radio.
That's wonderful. tell us who you are.
Who is Anthony Hudson? Yes. This is like I was born, I grew up. I am a local queer performer and artist here in Portland, Oregon. I'm one of those delicious mixed-race individuals who makes a lot of work that focuses on what it means to be a person that lives in a world where you're understood as being mixed-race, which I think is fun because it sounds like a like dog breeding. So I'm a lot of my work is interested in that. And when I do work as Carla Rossi, who's my drag character that I'm better known as to most people in this town, Carla is kind of my way of dealing with whiteness and passing as a white person, even though technically, you know, my entire lineage was brutalized and murdered by white people throughout the last 300 years. So yeah, that's me.
Thanks for being here. And we're going to dig into those issues, some of those issues a little bit later. We agreed to do this interview because Friday night.
Oh my gosh. Is it this Friday?
It's this weekend sometime.
It's Monday.
Monday the 30th.
You're so excited that you're putting it sooner into the future.
It's true. So the 30th, Monday the 30th, at the unfortunately named Moda Center, Cher and Cyndi Lauper.
Oh my gosh.
Now I saw, Cyndi Lauper was actually the first concert I ever went to.
Really, ever?
I was a pup, yeah.
Oh, I love this.
With the Hooters opening, which kind of made sense because, you know, they were doing their old Hooters stuff on the first solo record. And then I did see her at the Rose Garden opening for Tina Turner, of all people.
Oh, wow.
Probably 15 years ago.
Wow, that's
something like that. Anyway, so Cher and Cyndi Lauper, and that's sort of is where we started in talking about having a conversation on Out Loud tonight.
Have you seen Cher before?
Never.
I haven't seen either of them. And Cyndi has eluded me every time she's come around. That she did the zoo a couple years ago, and I sadly somehow missed that. And then when she did the True Colors tour, she only performed in Medford or somewhere far off that I couldn't make it to.
Yeah.
So this time I can't wait. And both of them, my gosh.
I know. It's a little crazy.
I'm going to spontaneously combust along with the entire queer audience, I think, in attendance.
Which could be thousands.
It's going to be a very messy cleanup for the Moda Center employees, I'm sure.
Let's see. Tell us about Carla Rossi. A little bit more about Carla Rossi.
Carla Rossi is the ghost of white privilege, and that's funny because white privilege will never die. No, Carla Rossi is the most famous white woman in Portland, Oregon. She's America's drag clown sweetheart, and she's Portland's premier drag clown. Carla hosts a ton of events around town when she's not living in her dumpster downtown.
Mm-hmm. That's the dumpster that... has raccoons.
There's a couple raccoons. Yeah, yeah. There's also some Justin Bieber stand-up posters, cardboard cutouts, and a couple new strains of diseases that no one has discovered yet.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. It's a fun place, and you can see it all on YouTube.
I want to thank Carla for emceeing an event of mine. Thriller World Portland, we do a thriller dance every year as a fundraiser for SMRC, Portland's Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center.
Yes.
This will be our eighth year this year. And actually, I'm giving a lesson at a community event this weekend, at Community Day at Quest Center.
Great.
So I'm already, it's hard to believe that the calendar is fully turned over and it's thriller time again. In fact, I need to sort of practice before I go and teach other folks to do it because... Because it's been a while.
I can't believe it. It feels like it was just the other day.
Yeah.
That was so much fun. It's funny because everybody pretends they don't know the Thriller dance, and they pretend that they need a rehearsal, and then I show up and I say, okay, everybody, now's the rehearsal, learn the dance, and they do full choreography. Yeah. You know, there's like smoke machines, professional lighting, 8 cameras with dollies.
Well, adrenaline would do that for folks. They really do think, oh my God, this is so difficult, I'll never be able to do this. And no, they get out there and...
They pull it off. And those little kids especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And after Carla left, the sweetest thing happened. This little boy showed up and with his mom. And they had taken the Max to the Hollywood Center, and they thought there was a bus to Irving Park where we performed. And there wasn't one, so they had to walk the 2 miles. And so they missed the performance. And there was, I think, just 3 of us left just hanging on the park. We had all this food, and we still had the music, and it was gorgeous. So we were like, okay, we're going to picnic. And very, you know, he's probably 6, and he came up very quietly, and he said, are we going to dance the Thriller dance? Very seriously. And I said, yes, we're going to. So he danced with us. He did a great job.
Oh.
And his mom emailed me a couple of days later to say that was like the best thing that ever happened to him. He just was like cloud 9 the rest of the day. And they were, you know, they were out in public, and he was like, where he went, he was like, play Thriller so I can dance it for everybody.
That is so sweet.
Yeah.
That's
the kind of thing that really makes one of the things that can make an event really worth it.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I say that Carla is an awful person, but I think... For being as bad as she is and as clueless as she is, you know, she does try to do good in the community at least and give back by hosting events like that or showing up to all these little wonderful fundraisers and restraining herself from saying awful things for a couple hours.
let's hear... Do you want to tell us about what we're going to hear, Sausage?
Oh, yes. So I'm in a band... with my good friend Cayenne Pepper, also known as Pepper Pepper, also known as kpepper.net. What's that? kpepper.net. And it's called The Decepticons, and we made this song with Kiberia Jones and Jin the Body Hackworth, and we actually just released our music video for Sausage Party, and it's your new hit summer jam. You can see the video on youtube.com/Hudsonology, and it's called Sausage Party.
Wonderful.
I was thinking that,
yeah.
I was thinking that maybe, if I just kept, like, doing that thing I like to do with my butt, that I could just, like, move around the space with my bones.
Oh, like a brittle sausage. Like a brittle sausage.
It's like, a little brittle sausage, my little brittle sausage baby.
I love brittle sausage babies and little brittle sausage baby sacks.
Diva. one time with that guy. When I gave that TED talk about being fabulous, I just kind of stood there and let people stare at me while I ate a banana. It's a party! It's a sausage party!
Salvia is destroying our children. They smoke it late in the night at 2 in the morning, and they turn into helicopters. They throw themselves off of buildings, and they listen to Lindsay Lohan records. How long can this go on, America? How long?
Sausage pajama party.
It's a party. It's a sausage party.
It's a party. Yes, it's a sausage party.
Yeah, that's the Decepticons Hudsonology on YouTube, and you'll find it.
Yes.
Let's talk about what you and Carla Rossi are doing coming up. Well, what have you done recently, and what's coming up? It's Pride Month, so there's, you know.
Oh, so what aren't we doing? which I have to say I'm in a very blessed place to be able to say that. I just did the big gay boat ride with Bianca Del Rio, and then I did a party after that with Adore Delano, both queens from RuPaul's Drag Race. I did that on Pride Sunday. I got to throw my big cabaret that I do every year, Queerlandia, at Embers, which I love doing shows at Embers because I don't get to go there very often. And when we do go, that place is just so rich with history, having been open, you know, for the last 800 years, I think. They have drag queens that they keep in closets from the Cretaceous period. So I just did that. And coming up, I'm doing a show with my good friend Melody Awesomazing. It's a queer comedy show called Totes Hilares. She always corrects me. I think it's Hilares. And that's at Floyd's Coffee downtown this Thursday night. And then I'm going off to Seattle to do Seattle Pride Fest. I'm hosting the music stage on Sunday. And then coming up, there's a couple other things, but the big one that I can't wait for is I'm having Carla Rossi's Purity Ball on July 13th at Brank's.
And what can we expect at the Purity Ball?
Have you heard of Purity Balls?
No. Mm-mm.
They're a fascinating, horrible thing that happens in American culture. They happen in 49 out of 50 states. And it's where a 12-year-old girl, it's kind of like a quinceañera for extremely religious fundamentalist Christians, but it's where a 12-year-old girl pledges her chastity to her father, and he protects it, and she puts on a purity ring, wears a little white dress, and dances the first dance wedding style with her dad. So Carla's doing that because she's that white and pure.
So what can folks who come. Can they Carla will perform that ceremony for anybody who decides to come. They should bring a father figure
yes,
of some sort.
Yes, bring a father figure. Wear white. We're going to have, actually, if you can't bring a father figure, we are going to have a daddy auction sponsored by Matt Barracuda from the Barracuda Beartown Parties. And we're also going to have a drag show run in a traditional ball style format, but presented as a drag show. And we'll also have a very special guest, internationally known, that I cannot unfortunately announce just yet. But we will have a very special guest there too to officiate my oath of chastity to my dad.
Oh my. You said that was July 13th at Branks?
July 13th at Branks.
Wonderful. Yes. Wonderful. Purity Ball. We will post that information on our Facebook, KBO Out Loud. Find us. Let's talk a little bit about Cher and Cyndi Lauper and who the heck they are and not who the heck they are.
Are those gals?
We're going to just take it for granted, the folks who know who they are. But what are they, what chords do they strike in you? I'll go first. Very briefly. For me, Cyndi Lauper was, I was 13, so it was like, boom, okay, I'm gay, and Cyndi Lauper confirms it. Like, yes. It was that moment, you know?
Yes.
Sort of everything happened at once. And I also went through, in response to that, I didn't go running around, you know, trying to find a boyfriend. Instead, I wore orange all the time, like for months afterwards.
That's fabulous.
And my dad had a whole closet full of shirts that he didn't, you know, he'd worn, you know, 15 years before. So there was all this like early 70s clothing. So there was a lot of orange to choose from. You know, there was a whole section of that closet that was orange. So it was very easy.
You were just a walking road cone.
I haven't had a particular relationship to share, over the years, but I've observed, and I know that Cher is someone who strikes a lot of different chords in people. Actually, I was at the Queer Youth Summit this weekend, and this was a chord I hadn't heard, which I sort of wish I hadn't heard struck. One of the youth in attendance said, "I don't like Cher. She's old." And that was it. That was the whole conversation.
That's both ignorant and ageist. That's what I have to say about that.
Given that it was a youth summit and a youth experience, I didn't feel like it was my place to intervene and say, you know, I'm old too.
Yeah. Well, good for you.
So that's that. But Cher is someone who openly identified as Armenian, which is one of these ethnicities that I think is confusing for people.
Uh-huh.
It's a kind of whiteness that's exotic,
mm-hmm.
And I think hard for people to puzzle out.
Yes.
And so that's one of the things I've sort of observed from a distance.
Interesting. Yeah, I think for me, I mean, Cher, obviously it was the same kind of thing. I'm like 11, 12, 13. I'm realizing that I'm different in more ways than one from the rest of my peers. And I immediately was drawn to, it was Madonna, Cher, and Cyndi Lauper. Madonna and I'm still tight with Madonna. We don't speak often sometimes, but Cher and Cyndi Lauper, oh, I mean, those two I think are pretty impeccable. Also, Cher, you know, as being somebody in the drag world, my friend Jinx Monsoon has often joked about the fact that Cher is like the queen vampire for drag queens, that if you kill the main vampire, then all the other ones die. So if Cher died, all the other drag queens would just dissolve in sunlight. So there's that aspect of Cher. Is just, she's such a campy, just drag legend. The woman is a walking drag queen. But she's also, I also really identified with the song Half-Breed growing up, because I'm half Native, I'm a Grand Ronde Indian and half German, and being gay too, I just never felt like I really fit in whichever box I found myself thrown into. And so the song Half-Breed, I mean, racist it may be, I think it actually brings up a lot of really wonderful, interesting points. And then Cyndi Lauper, she's just... she's so unusual. I love her.
She is.
I love her. I love how unique she was. I'll never forget, after my first pass at the university system, I now have a bachelor's degree, but it took a while. And after my first pass, I said, I can't do this. I quit. And I spent 2 weeks shacked up with a Cyndi Lauper tour DVD, just crying and watching it over and over. And there's something about these really iconic women that I think queer people, and especially gay men, can kind of latch onto. They're kind of, they become mother figures almost, I think. And I'm a very deep mama's boy, but I also grew up Catholic. And I think, so there's some weird convergence of iconic female motherly musician meets the Virgin Mary meets just this camp gay sensibility where they go into that holy place, you know, they become idols.
That Virgin Mary reference, you know, it reminds me, I think, that neither Cher nor Cyndi Lauper, they're both they don't hide their bodies.
Uh-huh.
And certainly Cher doesn't.
No, not in Bob Mackie.
but nor do they use sex as some saleable commodity, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. They don't put it out there as I'm your sex dream.
Yeah.
That's what I want to be.
Yeah.
They're each of them is grounded in some different embodiment in when it comes to performance.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that makes them comfortable in a way that you could imagine, like, yeah, you could imagine spending the day with Cyndi Lauper doing, you know, traveling around town.
Oh,
and
yeah, driving around Queens, getting a hot dog.
Visiting her mom.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, and so they seem human in a way, you know, friendly.
I think so. I think Cyndi especially. Cyndi Lauper, I should say. Cher's the one with one name. Cher, her Twitter. Have you seen her Twitter?
Mm-mm.
It is the greatest thing in the history. She's openly dyslexic, and she's unapologetic about it. And she will write the most amazing assemblage of letters and words and punctuation and tweets that go on for maybe five tweets in a row. And you have to figure out what are these Cher hieroglyphics. But they're amazing. They're full of great insights. They're hilarious. And yeah, if you ever need to pass some time, just go on Twitter and look at Cher. It's
all
great.
Right. Let's go back and let's talk about what Half Breed is. It's been 41 years, I think, which is almost...
Yeah.
I'm older than that, but not by much. Just a little...
Just a,
was
you're
a, top
a spry 17, Alan.
So Half Breed, tell us what it is.
Half Breed, what does she say? My mother... married up your Cherokee, I can't remember. I'm not going to spew out the lyrics, but it's about a person in the song. It's identified as Cher because back in the day, Cher said like, oh, I'm so-and-so native, you know, and I have this much blood. And that's an awful Cher impersonation, especially post-allergies. But it's about a person who, kind of in the same way that I was describing my experience, is a full-blood Indian on one side, and then half, altogether they're half Native and half white, basically, and they don't feel like they fit in either world, and they're rejected by both societies. The white kids at school call her a Cherokee and make fun of her, and then the tribe won't accept her as one of their own and acts like she's just another white kid that doesn't have culture and is assimilated. And She paraded around in headdresses when she would do the song. In the music video from the Sonny and Cher show, she's sitting on a horse, and she's very, she has that very brave kind of stoic look that she's selling and the fantasy she's serving. But at the same time, there is something really intelligent about the song in that it highlights those people that are trapped between worlds, you know.
And as I said, you know, having this one of these, I think, more ambiguous white ethnic backgrounds, Cher herself may have been drawing on something in her own experience.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear Half Breed. I want to mention that Carla has an uncommon lip sync.
Yes, yes.
To this song, that is, it's an amazing performance.
Oh.
There's a lot happening in it, and so I really urge folks to go go check it out on YouTube. It's the uncommon lip sync of Half Breed by Carla Rossi. This is Alan. Welcome back to Out Loud. We're here with Anthony Hudson. We're talking about performance, performativity, divas, all sorts of great things. Now, when Anthony and I were talking today, we were talking about some of the inspiration around creating Carla Rossi.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out we have a shared obsession.
Oh my gosh. I was so happy to find this out. So happy.
And I'm so happy to be able to talk about this on the radio. I always, you know, I feel like it's my dirty secret. My friends don't want me to ever talk about Shea St. John again. They're like, okay.
Yours too? Your...
Yes.
It's funny. It is like a subcultural kind of back alley thing now where you just kind of go to hidden doors and knock on slots and somebody says Shea St. John. You say hello again.
Exactly. So do you want to tell us who Shea St. John is.
I'm going to need your help because I've discovered you're you are the expert, whereas I am just a plebe that's just kind of discovering.
I've been studying for a long time.
So I first started watching Shea St. John videos about 4 or 5 years ago when Carla was beginning to gestate. And I found it on YouTube. I was shown it by a friend. And Shea St. John is... Well, can we reveal that Shay actually is a video artist who's dead? Maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Shay was, just to ruin the mystery for all the viewers that will soon be obsessed, Shea St. John is the brainchild spawn of this video artist named Eric Fournier?
Fournier, yeah.
Fournier. And basically Shay was, I like to think of as the original internet meme. She had a MySpace and a old website full of GIFs, and you could watch all of her videos, which were called Triggers. And Shea is this very glamorous yet completely falling apart former supermodel who might have been hit by a train or who might have been burnt up in a car crash, who survived in a very eyes without a face way, mm-hmm. and wears a full mannequin mask and has prosthetic or mannequin arms and limbs, and she has a very pitch adjusted voice, and her best friend is a doll named Kiki, and they go on all kinds of fun adventures, and you watch it and it's an acid trip, basically.
It is. And I one of the things that's really interesting, I think, is that sort of on a surface level, I think, is that Shay never identifies as a gender.
Yes.
There's no she to Shay.
No.
Even though Shay wears these giant curly wigs and these long dresses and these boas. And
she's just layers of fabric.
Yeah. And but at root, I think, you know, what this artist was trying to discuss in creating Shay St. John and this massive body of videos that actually continue to surface.
Yes,
clips do continue to sort of slide out, you know, here and there. But there's some dozens, and there's a DVD collection of them. What Eric was really talking about was, I think, was performance. What are you doing when you perform yourself? Mm-hmm. And when you talk about your own performance, you can do that in the guise of other people's identities. And I think that's what Shay is when Shay is acting as a supermodel or as an actress. You know, there's a number of pieces where Shay is clearly performing as someone who is famous.
Yes.
And there are others where Shay is just Shay and just hanging out, but is aware that there's a camera there. You know, it's very rare that Shay is not performing, is not yeah. explicitly performing herself, let's say. Mm-hmm. And so I've been fascinated by that. I've been fascinated by this really what I think is a pretty complex conversation in the videos about what it means to be a performing person, an existing being, and one who isn't whole, one whose parts could fly off at any minute because yeah. they're literally artificial.
Yeah.
And Shay doesn't acknowledge at any point that those limbs, all of her limbs, are artificial, or that she's wearing a mask. And so, for Shay, those things are part of her being. They're literal because mm-hmm. she's using them, I think. So it's really, you know, I spend a lot of time, more than anybody wants to hear about, trying to think through all of this, to think through what Eric was trying to communicate to other people about what it means to, you know, sort of more superficial notions about what celebrity is and what it means to be, especially a desperate celebrity.
Definitely.
But also, you know, at root, what it means to be, alive and have to communicate yourself. To get yourself around, to tell people what you need. One of the things that's really interesting, I think, is that Shay never has a coherent and calm interaction with another human being.
No,
they
not once.
All end up with the other person screaming and running away.
Yeah.
The only people that Shay is sort of capable of having a conversation with are inanimate.
Kiki.
And even those don't go that well.
No.
Like, Kiki kind of does whatever Kiki wants.
She'll fly off or she'll burst into flames.
And so there's a whole series of mannequins that are part of Shay's peer group. So everything sort of reflects back that if you want to think about Shay, you have to think about it in sort of the terms that Shay is presenting. Mm-hmm. No one is giving you, no one is helping you.
No, there's no paint by numbers instruction manual or anything with Shay. That's interesting. She is very much about the constructedness of self, I think, and identity. And the idea that we're all to go to like Judith Butler's idea of performativity and identity that we're all constructions drawing on different layers of history and words and signifiers that are making our way through space and time.
Yeah, indeed.
And in Shay's case, she's literally mm-hmm. constructed with mannequin pieces and layers of fabric.
And she carries her history with us, too, in these triggers that you mentioned, mm-hmm. which cause her to have meltdown after meltdown.
Yep.
And how they come about, we don't know. We just have the performative aspect of them. We just see, you know, what happens when these things come up, and she has these... a whole variety of really interesting meltdowns. So go on YouTube, Shay St. John.
Shay St. John.
And dig in, you know, get in the get caught in the snares of Shay St. John and see if you ever get out again.
You won't.
And we also, Anthony, you and I also talked about Dina Martina.
Oh, my gosh.
Who was just here, what, 2 months ago, 3 months
ago? Yeah, I got to meet her. I freaked out.
That's wonderful.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
It was the first time I'd seen her live. I've only known about her, honestly, for like the last 2 years. And seeing her, it was actually really funny watching Dina Martina. For those of you that don't know Dina Martina, she's a Seattle and Provincetown performer that actually she's probably bigger than the cosmos now. But she can't get anything right. But in failing to get anything right, she wins at everything. She is such an amazing performer. She tries singing these classic show tunes, but she botches them and mixes them in with other songs.
Dina believes that she's a star.
Yes.
And operates from that. Shay also does.
Yes.
Is that true of Carla as well?
Oh, definitely, for sure. That's why Carla's the most famous white woman in Portland, Oregon, according to her. Self-proclaimed. But that's why I'm so interested in characters like Dina Martina and Shay St. John, and I'm really drawn to the kind of drag that shows that everything is a fabrication, and it's not saying I'm going to try and act as this idea of a woman, whatever that is, but rather like I'm more interested in exposing the cracks in how we, in what we signify, and the differences between what constitutes man or what constitutes woman. And Dina and Shay, I think, are definitely paragons of that. That kind of genderqueer performance and drag.
Let's talk about PCPSA 2.
Oh, the new video, yeah. Lead me into it.
Well, gosh, PCPSA 2. It's a Carla Rossi video in which Carla explores notions of how to be a responsible person of privilege.
Yes. And she does it in entirely wrong ways.
Well, I yes and no. I mean, the video itself sort of leads you to, I mean, it makes it clear that here are the things that are off base. I think it's actually a more gentle video, much more gentle than it could be. I mean, if you go on a Tumblr, you know, people get pummeled constantly for any perceived expression of privilege or actual expression of privilege. And I think Carla has a sense of humor, at least in this video, about what it means to take responsibility and be an active listener. And
yes.
And so I think there is some self-awareness in Carla's performance, although it ends on a
well, don't spoil the ending.
Something of a different note.
Yeah. being dragged away into a dark, dank basement.
So that's another interesting video. That's also on YouTube under Hudsonology.
Hudsonology. Mm-hmm. YouTube.com/Hudsonology. It's my newest video. It's the newest in the PCPSA series. And it's definitely something. It's anytime you've ever seen a flame war on Facebook or on Tumblr, if you've ever witnessed one of those, then this is the video for you. It's actually based off of a flame war that I might have accidentally, air quotes, started online when I saw a pretty racist party poster once. So,
and that was here. Yes.
It was here. But I really care for some of the people that made an unfortunate choice, and I drew light to that choice online. Mm-hmm. And then I decided that for this video I had to put it on Carla and have her be the one that's throwing an awful racist party. So then she leads the viewer through how to respond to these unfortunate slights.
Wonderful. So tell us again, what is Carla Rossi up to in the very near future?
Well, so immediately, she will be doing Seattle Pride Fest on June 29th. If you aren't at the stage where they're going to have George Takei and Jackie Beed and Heklina, you will be on my stage where I will be hosting the music stage with acts like Magic Mouth from Portland and Naughty and A.B. Soto. And then July 13th, I'll be doing Carla Rossi's Purity Ball at Branks. And then on November 15th, far into the future, but not far enough, it's coming up close, I'm doing my first full-scale one-woman show, but it's a lie because there's multiple other people in the show, called Carla Rossi Sings the End of the World. And I actually received a grant from the Regional Arts and Culture Council to put this one on. And it's about the similarities between the Weimar Republic just before the rise of Nazism and America today. But told through the eyes of Carla Rossi with songs by Kurt Weill and live piano. And that will be at the Alberta Rose Theater on November 15th.
Wonderful. And I think I need a purity ceremony myself. So if you're, dear listeners, if you are interested in being my father figure for that, please get in touch. Anthony, it's wonderful to see you. Thanks
wonderful
so much
to see you, Alan.
Wonderful. We're going to hear a little bit of Cyndi Lauper, and then we're going to come back with Jack and Amari with Pervert the Cirque.
Now, I must say, moving right along, I love you too. She bumped, she bumped, she bumped, she bumped, she bumped, bump, bump.
Yeah.
Welcome back, listeners. We're here on Out Loud. We have Jack and Amari with Pervert the Cirque. Thanks for being here. Hi.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Do you want to introduce yourselves real quick?
Sure. My name is Jack Stocklin, and I'm a clown and aerial performer.
And I'm Amari Fana, and same kind of thing.
So you're with this troupe called Pervert the Cirque?
Yes, that's correct.
Tell us about the history of Pervert the Cirque.
Pervert the Cirque came about partly because Amari wanted to do circus skills, and partly because I already do them, and we thought that would be a good time to do them together. And it partly came about because we were not seeing ourselves as queer people represented in the circus world that I see. I go see circus, and if I see anything queer at all, it's sort of the lipstick, long fingernail, lesbian trapeze duo or something that's sort of totally fake and not very satisfying as a queer person. I'm like, oh, that is for a straight audience. That is not for me. So it came out of that feeling of lack. Let's make a circus where we see ourselves and we can be ourselves.
Yeah.
And how long have you been performing together?
We're coming up on three years?
Yeah, we've been trying to figure out that. When did we start doing that? So the first circus was a year and a half ago.
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Yeah. I'm bad with time. Really bad with it. But 2 years ago, we did our first circus. It was September, so something like
2 years ago.
Anyway, yeah, there it is.
How many other folks are involved with the Cirque?
We have a core group of about five or six people, and then we've brought in different artists for different shows. So this show, I think we have
eight or nine
performing artists that have joined us. So
wonderful. Yeah. Sounds great. So this show is... you're performing Friday and Saturday this weekend at the Echo Theater, which is, it says here, 1515 Southeast 37th. So that's Hawthorne
and 37th, right across from the Baghdad and the triumvirate of coffee with Stumptown and Pete's and all the other ones right there.
Perfect.
In that same corner.
So Friday and Saturday, the shows begin at 7:30.
Friday night, the show's at 8:30 p.m., and Saturday night, the show's at 7:30 p.m.
All right, wonderful. Both at the Echo Theater. Mm-hmm. Now, what can folks expect at this performance this weekend?
Yeah, well, you can expect to see queers doing circus arts. So we have aerialists doing lyra, which is a big metal hoop. We have people doing tissue, which is the giant curtains, people on trapezes of various kinds, and we also have partner acrobatics. So a lot of different circus arts are represented, as well as dance and some live music.
And lots of clowns and monsters and creatures as well thrown in.
Mm-hmm. Well, clowns are definitely part of the theme of today's show.
Yay!
Clowns and clowning. The show is called Ephesus.
Mm-hmm. Can we hear some? Ephesus. Yeah. So Ephesus is a city in what's now modern-day Turkey. And we were discussing back and forth themes to go with, and we decided to go with a mythology sort of theme. And part of that, for me, was coming from my mother passed away recently, and Ephesus was a city we went to back in 2010, and that was a really lovely experience for me, and so to be able to bring a part of her into this circus was really important to me. So.
Yeah. We also picked it as the mythology theme, and building on that and emphasis the connection with that, but also that there was the Library of Celsus there and this Temple of Artemis and all of these wonderful ruins that kind of show, you know, this institution that has kind of crumbled a little bit, and some of them have been repurposed to become monuments to these nymphs and these more or less what could be described as, you know, the queer and trans creatures of that world, and how we've kind of crawled into here and are retelling all of these myths.
Some of the statues in Ephesus and in the surrounding areas, there's some statues and gods and goddesses that are clearly queer and genderqueer, and it struck me in reading the descriptions of them in the museums that their genderqueer and queer identities were totally erased completely. I was like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, I don't want that to ever happen to me, so I better be really queer, like unerasably queer.
There's a lot there. I mean, there's a lot in sort of re-embodying those myths and those persons, even if they're mythological, and retelling those stories in the light of an entirely new set of complications that we have here today. What do you think that means for each of you? To be here now telling those kinds of stories in a new and let's call it an American way.
it's one of those things where I honestly don't think it is so much a new retelling, that, you know, the ancient Greeks and Romans saw all these things that they couldn't explain, so they came up with these tales that they would tell, and all these stories of how these things that they didn't understand became monsters in their stories, and how even today, like, to a degree, it's not that much different. As queer and trans folk, you know, so often described as these monsters and kind of taking up that title and moving with that, whereas in these, the Greek mythology, it's kind of, these are these scary creatures and the stories told about them dying, but in our retelling, it's more about owning that story and really enjoying that and proclaiming that.
Indeed. I don't know if... Go ahead.
Oh, it's also really fun to become embody a god or goddess. Like, I get to wear a little tiny gold bodysuit and dance around like, you know, a statue of everything, you know? And that's a really good time.
That sounds wonderful. Taking on what Amari said, I don't know if you heard me earlier mention that this weekend the Portland area is hosting a conference for practitioners across the country of ex-gay reparative therapy.
Yikes!
So in response to that, there's a peaceful protest scheduled, and there's also a gentleman who's doing spent 12 years undergoing those kinds of treatments, so to speak, who's doing a piece called 12 Years of Fun Day, in which he uses a lot of different media to talk about his experience and sort of reclaim his body and his sexuality and his own ability to identify himself the way that he wants to. And it's called 12 Years of Fundy, and so he's performing that this weekend, not far from where the conference is being held, south in Clackamas, as a response to this creepy creepster conference that's happening.
Mm-hmm. I think part of the reason of looking, part of another reason of looking at myths is seeing ourselves in history. Mm-hmm. Like that idea of reawakening the queerness of those myths and performing it and making it alive and making it now, which I think is super important.
Yeah. I wish we had more time. It's 7 o'clock, so Hard Knock Radio is coming up, and they're ready to get started. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here. So Ephesus is Pervert the Cirque's show this weekend.
Yeah, and this weekend, tickets are $15 in advance. You can buy them at perverttheCirque at .brownpapertickets.com, and they're $20 at the door. We also have just like two VIP seats available, so you'll get snacks and
services
with your ticket.
And I'll leave you to imagine what those services are.
Ooh, yum. And it's really fun. It's a lot of circus show, and every Pervert the Cirque show is a fundraiser for somebody's gender-related medical expenses, and this time it's for me.
Oh, wonderful. So that is Friday evening, 8:30, the show begins. Saturday evening, 7:30, the show begins. Ephesus by Pervert the Cirque at the Echo Theater in Southeast Portland. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amari.
Thank you.
We're here on Out Loud. Thank you so much, listeners. We'll be back 1 week from today.
That was Out Loud, KBOO's queer public affairs show. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Portland Saturday Market, From Our Hands to Yours, celebrating 41 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 1st through Christmas Eve.